Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, Jill Derby joins us with an incredible story of an escape from Afghanistan to Iraq, plus what's going on with the Board of Regents. It's all coming up next on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
Hello, is this D&D Roofing?
Yes, it is. How may I help you?
You did such a great job on my roof. May I speak to the owner?
I am an owner.
Oh, can I speak to your supervisor?
Sure.
How may I help you?
I love your work. May I speak to the owner?
I am an owner. We're all owners. Well, that's why at D&D we work so hard to keep your home safe and sound.
Oh, no wonder.
D&D Roofing and Sheet Metal. Local, employee-owned, here for you.
Retail's impact on Nevada's economy? Enormous. 8,600 businesses, large and small, employing 145,000 workers. And last fiscal year, retail paid tax on nearly $60 billion in sales. We're the Retail Association of Nevada. We support retail. We help it grow. And we mean business.
RANNV.org.
Take a look at Pro Group Management and see how your workers' comp requirements can be met head-on. By taking a proactive approach, Pro Group can assure that your company is meeting or exceeding state and federal standards. As you move forward in your industry, Pro Group moves with you, simplifying regulatory tasks, clearing the way so you can get the job done, and look to your future success. Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
Early in the morning or throughout the night, professional truck drivers are on the job, serving you, safely moving freight that's crucial to our economy. From the oldest industries to our newest innovators, from the exotic to the everyday, trucks are everywhere, moving everything. Never afraid to embrace a future that makes Nevada and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
Nevada Newsmakers Studio is located at the headquarters of the Nevada Trucking Association. Motion and purpose are a truck's greatest virtue.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shan, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shan.
I'm back on Nevada Newsmakers. We're always delighted to welcome back to the program Jill Derby. She is the former Democratic State Party chair. And she was also chair of the Board of Regents for many years. We're going to get to that in a moment. But first of all, I want to talk about just a wonderful story. And I think the world needs wonderful stories right now.
I do too.
The New York Times, Jane Arif, published a story with the headline, Afghan college students find a new life and safety in Iraq. Regarded as infidels by the Taliban, over 100 students from the American University in Kabul have found an unlikely refuge in the Iraqi Kurdish city of Sulaymaniyah. Okay. People who are regular listeners to this program will know your connection to Sulaymaniyah, but would you share for people who are not familiar where that is, what you've been doing there, and where this incredible story came from?
Well, Sulaymaniyah is up in the northern part of Iraq. That is the Kurdish region.
And the safest region in Iraq.
Yes, and absolutely. It's very safe, it's very common, quite prosperous. And Sulaymaniyah is actually a very, you know, it's a kind of a hip city in a way, where you go to restaurants and have a cappuccino and so on and so forth. So, but some of these students were not so sure when they heard that this is where they were going. But I have to tell you the backstory, because we couldn't talk about it for at least a month because we feared for the safety of the Afghan students we had rescued.
And they were from the American
University, yeah.
The American University in Kabul. So they were involved in this whole trying to exit.
Yeah, absolutely. So that we consider them kind of a sister university. So the American University of Afghanistan, we're the American University of Iraq up in Sulaymaniyah. And so when we heard that the Taliban was on their way, we reached out to them and said, if your students need refuge, we'll take them. We said that without having any idea how we'd manage it or pay for it. And so we managed to get the first cohort of students that were on one of those buses trying to get to the airport. And they got to the airport. It was very challenging, and they had to go through some back way. It was risky. The American University of Afghanistan told their students, okay, we've got a rescue possibility, put a change of clothes in a backpack and anything you want to take, leave everything else behind, and get to this staging area. And so anyway, we got the first loadout of about 27, 28 students, mostly women.
How did you do it?
High-level connections. So we have a board, and I love to talk about this because, you know, right now the Board of Regents is under questionable
circumstances. We'll talk about them in a minute.
But we have a Board of Trustees that is very well connected in a lot of ways. So we're half American, we're half Iraqi Kurds, Iraqi Arabs, we have some Turks, and so on and so forth. A lot of high connections. The truth is also that the former chair of the board, who was the founder of the American University of Iraq in our country, is now the president of Iraq. So when he got elected, I stepped into being chair of the board. I was vice chair of the board. He was elected the president of Iraq. And then we have a couple of people on our board who have worked in the State Department, in diplomatic circles, and new contacts. So we got the Qatar government to help us out. And we got some chartered planes, but then the next group were stuck. And so we had to sort of work through the Taliban with their connection to the Qatar government, and we got the next cohort.
Through the Qatar government?
Yeah, Qatar. Okay. Because you see, the Qatar government has a relationship with the Taliban. You may recall that the deal that the Trump administration worked out with the Taliban all happened in Doha, all happened in Qatar. So they've had that connection all along. They're the one country that has some communication with the Taliban and can work with them a bit. So there was a lot of calls at a very high level. We were frantically trying to raise money. Now, I have to tell you, one of the things that was so encouraging, within about 36 hours, we had raised $1 million from big corporations in America. A few were reached out. We had those connections on the board. And we knew that we could somehow finance this because it was going to be expensive. We brought them in. At first, the funny thing is, when they got to Doha and told they were going to Iraq, some of them weren't so sure. It says that in the article. They said, wait a minute, where are we going? And so then they got to Sulaymaniyah, and they were just thrilled. You know, our president and staff met them at the airport in the middle of the night, brought them to the campus. They saw Sulaymaniyah as a wonderful, you know, modern city. But then we managed, and this is just a few weeks ago, to get another 80. The first group were mostly women. We felt they were most at risk. They felt they were most at risk. The president of the American University of Afghanistan was working very closely with us and their staff, you know, to know these students and to help them navigate once they got here. I say here because I'm often over there on our campus, but I mean in Sulaymaniyah. So, I mean, there was just this wonderful level of cooperation. Our board was just, we were meeting in executive session every day, figuring out all the pieces of it so that when they got there, they have nothing but a change of clothes. So we managed to get them to the local mall to buy some other clothes. We had flowers and pajamas waiting for them in the dorm rooms when they got there. And so now, and we hired extra counselors because they're very traumatized. I mean, imagine this ordeal. And if you read in the paper, there were students that stayed on the campus burning the records so the Taliban couldn't see who the students were and go after them and their families. So at the last minute, they got out after burning records and got to the staging area. Then the next couple of buses couldn't get out, so this was a big delay. And we couldn't speak about the story because we didn't want to risk any of the sort of arrangements that were being made. And we've been very careful to protect the identity of the students. And even RF doing the report for the New York Times, we finally felt, and Bahram Saleh, who's the president of Iraq, kind of gave the permission, okay, let's get the story out. So all the photos that she took were just of the backs of students. No names were used. You know, we're trying to protect their families back in Kabul.
Well, it has a happy ending, but what was the scariest moment in all of this?
Oh, well, I think that we were listening to on-the-ground reports that a bus got to the staging area, and the bus was going to try to get to the airport. And then we're waiting to hear, does the bus get to the airport? And then finding out that the bus had to stop. and couldn't get to the airport because just the kind of chaos that was going on there. And trying to make the arrangements to get Afghans out is very different than getting the Americans out. So the American government was focused on getting the Americans out. We had to make other arrangements because these young students who would have been at great risk with the Taliban, who saw the American university there as sort of a temple of infidels, or, you know, I mean, it just certainly didn't believe in what was going on at the American university, educating women and men together in classes and at the highest level of education. So, I mean, so there were a lot of just those moments where we thought, well, or we think they're on buses, they're heading to the airport, and then finding out that they can't get through. And then, what, you know, the American University of Afghanistan people were working with their students. We were working on our end, trying to be prepared, get the dorm rooms cleared and get ready for them, and then keep working at these high levels to, you know, get these students out. But we have a great board of trustees and people who really have just high-level connections, and we were so passionate about we got to help. It was like, you know, immediately we said, send your students here, we'll take them, and then we had to figure out, and our president and our staff at the university were great, had to figure out, okay, how are we going to do this?
Your trade is you're a cultural anthropologist.
Yeah.
Did you ever think that you would be involved in something like this?
No, of course not. And, you know, there's all those, they're Afghans, they speak a different language, except because they're students at the American University, they all speak English. So then, you know, we've got some in our classes, some of them are doing online with the former faculty from the American University of Afghanistan, spread all over the country now, all over the Middle East, and some have come back to the U.S., some are in Europe. So we're still navigating how to keep them on track towards a degree, and how is that degree going to work now that there is no more American University of Afghanistan, except their board of trustees and their president, Ian Bickford, who's a good friend of my son, Ryan, are trying to figure out how to persist as a university, maybe with a campus over in Doha, which is Qatar. But they spread their students to, I think, three different universities, and ours was their first choice.
The thing that we heard about a lot was that there were three different standards for Americans or people who are connected to America to be able to leave Afghanistan.
Yes.
Visas, gold cards, all kinds of things. What did you guys have to have for these students to get them out?
It was very complicated. We had to say, to begin with, we couldn't take any students that didn't have passports. Blessedly, most of them did. I'm going to throw out if maybe 80% did. So the students to get on a bus had to have a passport. We worked, our government, and having a special friend as the president of Iraq, we worked overnight to get them visas into our country. And that never happens, you know. We just made that happen. It was under an emergency order and temporary visas to get them. They had passports. Then to fly into Iraq, they had to have a visa to come in. And that's the way it works. So now we're trying to, you know, just sort of work all that out so everything, all the paperwork that didn't quite get done gets done, and they're in good standing. I think many of them will end up coming here to this country. We're working hard, our board and through the State Department, to get them what's called P1 and P2 status, which is preferred refugee status, because most of them, I think, will want to get over here. And I'm hopeful that universities and colleges across the country will be generous in offering them scholarships. They have no funds. We had to raise enough money to offer them $300 a month spending money because they don't have any, and just provide them with everything they need while they're there. So now working on where do they go next is what's, some may stay with us. Many, I think, will come here. Maybe there are other places in Europe they'll choose to go to finish their college education.
What a story. Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about not such a pretty story in our state. We'll be right back.
The Nevada Builders Alliance has been protecting the interests of the construction industry for over 50 years.
Our programs save members thousands of dollars every year and allow them to provide much-needed benefits to their employees. Our industry also allows Nevada to grow. If you're thinking about a career in the construction industry, reach out. And if you haven't thought of a career in construction, what are you waiting for? We are the Nevada Builders Alliance.
I can't do it. Stupid, like my mom.
We can't do anything at Mommy's because you won't pay child support.
Dad said you cheated, and he's not even sure he's my dad.
Mommy said you left both of us, so she isn't gonna let me see you.
I look just like my father.
I'm divorce attorney Marilyn York, and I may represent men, but hate has no gender, only casualties. Please, stop sacrificing your children in your war against your ex.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
Before the masks, before the distancing, before the world changed, UMC was ready. Our response to COVID-19 began before the crisis did, with our own team of infectious disease experts who've spent their careers planning for this moment. With a pandemic response plan, we'd practiced again and again, and by blazing new trails in large-scale testing, including every patient we admit. Always ready. UMC.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Jill Derby. She is the former Democratic State Party chair, president of the Board of Regents. What is going on with our university system? It seems like complete insanity. Let's start with what's happening with the chancellor and her accusations. And tell us what they are and what you make of it.
Well, I'm just going to speak on a more general level, but I mean, this really started with the chancellor issuing a complaint, a 21-page complaint, feeling that she had been the subject of a hostile environment in her workplace at the system office. She really directed that at the chair and the vice chair of the board. So that's what began this story. I just want to say a few things about it, Sam, because a lot of people can't put that in context. So there's some things about this story that are not unusual and then things that are highly unusual. The not unusual is the truth that the conflict between a chancellor and the board is not that unusual. This is a world I still work in higher education with university boards. During my tenure, my 18-year tenure on the Board of Regents, we went through probably four different chancellors, and a couple of them, they left as a result of tension between the chancellor and the board. There are two different lanes of authority. The Board of Regents has final authority in Nevada. They are the governing board. And the chancellor, they delegate authority to the chancellor to manage a system. 13 regents can't manage a system. But they're separate lanes of authority, and we've got a fairly new board. Most of them are in a first term. It takes a while to figure out what you do as a regent. I mean, you know, if you're elected to the legislature, you know what you do. As a regent, that's different. It's higher education. You're the fiduciary, you know, and so forth.
And you have huge briefing books before every meeting. It's not like it's a one-page sheet.
It's a tough job, that office, honestly. But navigating the relationship between the chancellor and the board is not so easy. It's not so clear-cut. And it takes really good communication. It takes sort of a negotiation to figure out which lane you're in. But lanes get breached, and if communication isn't good and it fails, it looks like there's some communication breaches on both sides here. But then trouble ignites. Now, most in my experience, here in Nevada and everywhere else, this is handled internally. I mean, it's sort of like a personnel issue,
right?
That you don't air that in public. Personnel issues always are sort of done internally. This is very public now. So the other thing that's very unusual, I've never heard of a chancellor doing a complaint. We live in the Me Too era when women actually feel empowered to speak up if they feel like they're victims of a hostile workplace. So obviously, and that's a good thing, by the way. I've been working for women's rights for a lot of years. I'm grateful for the Me Too movement. I'm grateful that women feel they can speak up. But to get that in the public sphere to have it happen and then in the public sphere is something I don't know that has been dealt with anywhere before. It's very messy and it's hurting the reputation of the board.
Well, I was going to ask you that. What are people around the country in the education world saying about Nevada?
Well, I've heard it from them and they're just like, what on earth is going on in Nevada? This is so unusual. And the resolution still is, I'm not sure about, but I hope there can be some resolution. The board deals with such important issues in higher education and complicated issues and 8 different institutions. And this is just now dominating their space. And it's just got to be resolved. I'm not sure how it can be resolved. As I say, it's highly unusual, and it's very difficult. And once you sort of have a divided board, I've been down that road before, it's very hard to bring it back together. People feel passionate about their side, that they saw this and it's wrong, and, you know, on both sides of an issue.
We're also seeing a complaint from the president of Truckee Meadows Community College.
Right.
So tell me about that.
Well, I know what you know. You know, I only know what I read in the press as well. But I think once again, it's the Me Too movement and women feel empowered to call it out in a way that they never have before. And she has said she has felt herself a victim of a hostile workforce, hostile environment. So I think the Board of Regents.
Is that the school or with the Board of Regents?
Well, I think it was with the Board of Regents more than with the school. I think she was directing it there. You know, I feel very strongly that community colleges sort of operate on a lower level than the universities and can easily feel a kind of environment of unequal treatment. I don't know that that's the case here. But anyway, once again, women feel empowered because they didn't used to be able to do that, call it out. I think that needs to be addressed. I'm hoping the Regents will look at the kind of environment that they bring so that the others that work for them can feel that it's a level playing field and it's a welcoming environment, but we've heard from 2 people that it isn't.
All right, let's take another break. We'll come back more with Jill Derby after this timeout.
7 at 7 is available anytime, anywhere.
I'm Riley Smith with your Vegas Golden Knights. Watch 7 minutes of nonstop news from the Las Vegas Review-Journal.
Streaming on LVRJ.com and Twitter, powered by the Las Vegas Review-Journal.
Modern boutique Ahern Hotel and Events Center in Las Vegas. Host meetings and events on 2 floors. Stay in luxurious rooms and suites. Unlimited branding opportunities. Regional Italian cuisine by Chef Mark Segrisi. Flexible event spaces. Full buyout options. Visit ahernhotel.com today.
I'm Jeff Gehrman, an investigative reporter with the Las Vegas Review-Journal. I'm your guide for season 2 of Mobbed Up, The Fight for Las Vegas.
You're in with every gangster and hoodlum in the United States.
I don't go for that, Mr. Kennedy. I don't go for that kind of action.
I was on television accused of fronting for the mob.
Subscribe to Mobbed Up, The Fight for Las Vegas, season 2, today on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Before the masks, before the distancing, before the world changed, UMC was ready. Our response to COVID-19 began before the crisis did, with our own team of infectious disease experts who've spent their careers planning for this moment. With a pandemic response plan, we practiced again and again, and by blazing new trails in large-scale testing, including every patient we admit. Always ready. UMC.
7 at 7 is available anytime, anywhere.
I'm Riley Smith with your Vegas Golden Knights. Watch 7 minutes of nonstop news from the Las Vegas Review-Journal.
Streaming on LVRJ.com and YouTube, powered by the Las Vegas Review-Journal.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
Back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Jill Derby. She's the former Democratic State Party chair and was chair of the Board of Regents and on the Board of Regents for 18 years.
Yeah.
So where does this all end up? I mean, first of all, you know, there's been a move at the legislature to try and get, you know, regents appointed rather than elected. How does this all play in now?
Because well, we'll see, because that'll come back probably in 2024. We'll be looking at that. I think that this could be critical because it's damaged the reputation of the board. by the way, it's damaged the reputation of the colleges and universities in Nevada, which troubles me greatly, needs to be resolved. There's an investigation. I hope they'll get the results of that investigation at their December 2nd meeting, and then can deal with whatever it recommends, whatever it calls with, do what they need to do regarding it, and so that they can move on to the important issues.
Okay, but also, what about when they need to hire somebody in the future to be a president or to be a chancellor? What kind of response are they going to get?
Well, I would think people would look pretty closely at Nevada. So I think it's problematic from a lot of points of view, and you got 13 people elected from different districts that have some common history there in terms of what's gone wrong, and I think it's a breakdown in communication. Chancellors and boards are supposed to consult and communicate, and that's not going very well.
Sounds like they need somebody to come in and do a little negotiating.
Yeah, I think they may need some outside help to put things together and get how to go forward from here. But we'll see what the investigation shows, and it may have recommendations that will help them provide a direction.
Jill Derby, always a pleasure to see you, and what a great story about what happened with the Afghan students going to Iraq. Congratulations.
We're so proud.
And you should be. And we'll be right back.
A bird's eye captures its surroundings at different heights. At Brian Culpa Photography, we can make your imagination soar over buildings, parks, cityscapes, and beyond. Brian's images tell the story and get the job done. If you need a new perspective to tell your story, contact Brian today. Brian Culpa Photography. Experience the bird's eye view at brianculpaphotography.com.
Kenny!
Dad?
What are you learning? This place is great.
Huh?
You gotta try this.
Wow! This stuff is great! People are gonna love it!
Yes. Yes, they were.
As you know, Reno is booming. Toll's development company is helping it grow with insightful design and development, building community with every project, adding beauty, adding excitement, emphasizing our shared humanity. Reno is becoming bigger. Toll's development is helping it become better, more livable, more enjoyable. To learn more, go to tollsdevelopment.com. tollsdevelopment.com.
Take a look at Pro Group Management and see how your workers' comp requirements can be met head-on. By taking a proactive approach, Pro Group can assure that your company is meeting or exceeding state and federal standards. As you move forward in your industry, Pro Group moves with you, simplifying regulatory tasks, clearing the way so you can get the job done, and look to your future success. Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you.
Don't forget, another way of watching Nevada Newsmakers is to subscribe to our YouTube channel, Nevada Newsmakers on YouTube. We'll see you on the next broadcast.